Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He typically joins us on Thursday afternoon at noon, but we will be interviewing Helena Moreno, who is a candidate for mayor of the city of New Orleans, and he has accommodated us by joining us today. So, Rafi, well, thank you and welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm all confused. I keep thinking today is Thursday because I'm talking to Newell. So you're messing up my day, but I'm glad to help.
Well, the weekend will start a day early for you then, my friend.
It doesn't work that way. I'd like to think it would, but it doesn't work that way.
Just keep with the flow. On a serious note, Tommy Tucker had an opportunity to interview Ralph Brennan yesterday, and they talked about Carl Morgan in this carjacking case, and you've uncovered some really disturbing revelations about this individual and about, I guess it's safe to say, the failure of the criminal justice system as it relates to this suspect or individual, I should say. The interview was tough, man, I tell you. Tommy and Ralph did a great job laying it out. The trauma, the emotion around it, a young baby without his father, just the horrific nature just goes on and on.
Right. So the only good that can come from a tragedy like this is to figure out maybe how it happened and try and determine if the system could have done anything and learn from the mistakes that were made. And this is, a classic case of why it's so critically important for the criminal justice system post-arrest to do their job and make decisions, not just what they think is the compassionate thing to do in the context of the offender, but to also make decisions that are taking into consideration the threat that some of these repeat offenders pose to themselves and the community. And my review of the perpetrator of this murder's criminal history, my opinion is he should not have been on the streets to have committed, that carjacking and murder. So let me kind of go over the criminal history of Raymond Wells, who's now deceased. He took his own life, after the carjacking and murder. But in September of 2022, while he was a student in high school, he was captured on video beating up a school teacher. That's a felony under state law. So that was in September of 2022. And he was released from custody. And while he was free on bail for the battery on a school teacher, he was arrested for carrying a concealed weapon in July of 2023, which is a misdemeanor. So he got out of custody on that misdemeanor charge. And then in October of 23, he was arrested on a battery charge in municipal court, another misdemeanor. And then In February of 2024, he was arrested, this time by the NOPD, carrying a concealed weapon with controlled dangerous substances, which is a second-class felony, meaning that there is a mandatory minimum of 5 years. So the police department arrested him on that. They determined that the firearm that he was carrying was a stolen weapon, so they booked him on possession of stolen property. They also discovered drugs on him, and the quantities of drugs suggested that he was possessing it with intent to distribute. And then he was carrying a concealed weapon, so he was booked with that. The DA's office accepted all of those charges. So the police are operating on probable cause. They submit their report to the DA's office. The DA's office reviews the police report and assesses whether there is sufficient evidence to convict the individual of the offense for which they're being charged with. So the screening division of the district attorney's office concluded that the police department appropriately arrested him for the 95E, which is illegal carrying of a weapon while in possession of controlled dangerous substances, and that offense alone is a mandatory minimum of 5 years. On top of that, the other charges meant that he could potentially be multiple billed as an habitual offender. But let me get to that in a moment. So the DA's office accepts all those charges. So those charges were accepted. And then the battery on a police officer, and carrying a concealed weapon arrests from 2022 and 23 were concluded with guilty pleas some 4 months after his arrest on the guns and drug charges. So, in other words, he had been arrested for carrying a weapon with controlled dangerous substance, a mandatory minimum of 5 years, the drugs and the gun charges. And after he was arrested on that, he pled guilty to the battery on a school teacher and carrying a concealed weapon in June of 2024. He received 1 year suspended sentence and 1 year of inactive probation, which means that his probation was not supervised by a probation officer. He was ordered to enroll in CAFE Reconcile and an integrity program, and also seek some mental health and substance abuse treatments. So that was the disposition of the 2022 and 2023 offenses, with basically a slap on the wrist, an active probation. Apparently the court concluded that he had mental health and substance abuse issues, and they granted him an active probation with no supervision, even after he had been arrested a few months earlier on new weapons and drug charges. So he's out on the streets, you know, after he has pled guilty in June of 24, the February of 24 arrest and prosecutions were concluded with another guilty plea in May of 2025, some 4 months before he murdered Mr. Morgan during the carjacking. So in May of 2025, Raymond Wells was allowed to plead guilty to a reduced charge. The DA's office gave him a reduction. Instead of having him and charging him as carrying a weapon while in possession of drugs, they reduced that weapons charge to a misdemeanor, meaning that instead of a mandatory minimum of 5 years, he was eligible for probation and a suspended sentence. But he still pled guilty to the drugs. So obviously the police department rightfully concluded that he was in possession of a firearm and drugs, which made it a mandatory minimum of 5 years. The DA's office accepted those charges, but in May of 2025, they allowed him to plead to a misdemeanor weapons charge and receive 2 years of suspended sentence and 2 years of active probation. That was 4 months before he committed the murder of Mr. Morgan during the carjacking. So the best predictor of the future is to look at the past. This is obviously a troubled individual that has a series of 4 arrests over a 2.5-year period of time, has not one but 2 felony convictions, progressing from serious to more serious. He was probated the first time. He was probated the second time. And the third time resulted in, you know, the murder of, you know, a young father, and a son is not going to have their dad, and his wife is not going to have her husband anymore because of poor decisions that were made by the prosecution and the judge. So the judge did not have to sentence this individual to a suspended sentence. That wasn't a requirement. The judge had discretion. So the judge shares some blame, but the DA's office is supposed to be representing the people of Louisiana. And Mr. Wells had criminal defense counsel, and I think that this chain of events was set into motion because the district attorney's office made a miscalculation in assessing the threats that this individual posed to the community and to himself. So, you know, this is a tragedy. The only good that can come from this tragedy is to assess what went wrong and do everything in our power to prevent it from occurring again in the future. So nobody wants to lock up people that don't pose a risk to the public, but I would argue, based on this criminal history, that the leniency that the district attorney's office gave to Mr. Wells not only did not do him any favors, it ultimately cost, you know, a young man his life, and that family will never recover from this senseless tragedy that should not have occurred, in my opinion. I believe that he should have been in custody, and if he had been sentenced, he would not have been on the streets some 4 months after his May guilty plea to commit this crime.
Rafi, we did a study with the JPSO for a number of years relative to juvenile offenders, looking at the types of crimes as to which crimes would reveal the highest propensity for violence later on in their life. And there were 2 crimes that rose to the top. One, battery of a school teacher. And we should never play down or diminish the importance of the sanctity of the school teacher and a student putting their hands on them. There was a greater than 70% propensity for violence later in life with a kid that put his hands on a school teacher. And the other was basically stealing an automobile. Very overt actions. I mean, this kid was 19 years old when he put his hands on a school teacher.
Yep.
And he walked out with nothing. Zippo.
Well, there was video.
You know.
And it was, I watched the video of him beating up the school teacher. And I saw an interview of the school teacher saying that he got out of teaching as a result of that incident. Just did not want to have to live through anything like that again. So prosecutor's office had that video. They were aware of it. And I don't believe that the initial sentence in which he received a 1-year suspended and 1 year of inactive probation did justice to the severity of the offense. And basically, he was released on the honor system. He was allowed to enroll in a CAFE Reconcile program, and I don't know what this integrity program is, and he was also ordered to get health and substance abuse treatment. But apparently none of that took. And the tragedy is that, okay, if you want to give him that chance, you give him that chance, but keep in mind that he pled guilty to those offenses in June of 2024, and he was still allowed to plead guilty to more serious offenses that he perpetrated after he pled guilty to another probated sentence, which, you know, again, was totally inappropriate. And the DA's office failed, if not in the first time, if you want to say that, you know, that was an appropriate sentence, give them the benefit of the doubt. But once you reoffend again in that short period of time with more serious charges, and you accept the more serious charges, but allow him to plead to an offense that allows him to be probated again, you know, you share culpability in this. And my only hope is that the district attorney's office and the judge both learn from this so that we don't see history repeat itself.
Unusual too, three different cases, same defendant, end up before Judge Levine in Section A, the same judge. So, you know, when we're exercising our discretion as to how we're going to treat these cases, I mean, they had to know. Right? They're all within months of one another.
So the reason for that is that when he was charged with the first offense, which was a felony, it was allotted to Section A Judge Levine. So when he got arrested on the misdemeanor offense, under the rules of court, since there was an open charge in her section of court, that misdemeanor gun charge went back to her.
Mm-hmm.
So his case was still open when he was arrested again in February of 2024. So that arrest for the more serious charges went to Section A2 under the rules of court. So the reason that those rules are like that is that, you know, you don't want different judges handling bits and pieces of a case involving the same defendant. So under the rules of court, the judge that got the first felony takes all the subsequent felonies on this. So Judge Levine was aware of his history. The DA's office was aware of his history. And the system failed the people of Louisiana in general, and they failed Mr. Morgan's family in this case, and they actually failed the defendant as well, because if he had substance abuse problems, if he had mental health issues, they didn't do him any favors by basically giving him probated sentences, you know, for these serious offenses. They set into motion the chain of events. I spoke to one of the reporters that interviewed a family member of Mr. Wells, and it was the family member said that they wish that he had gotten jail time for his convictions because he couldn't help himself and the family couldn't help him. So that's, you know, we have an adversarial system. The defendant and his attorneys can advocate for leniency, for second chances, but it is the responsibility of the prosecutor's office to represent the people of Louisiana and the victims of crime, and they failed in this matter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's interesting to me is that after the first charge, right, with the battery, and then you come back and you have the illegal carrying of a weapon that they made a misdemeanor. And if they had any inclination or any idea that this individual had an issue and may have had a substance abuse problem or a mental health issue, what would one think is going to happen if he got the gun? And then the third case comes up where you have illegal possession of a stolen firearm and an illegal carrying of a weapon yet again.
With drugs.
With drugs. With knowing about the substance abuse or mental health issue. I mean, who would think that there's going to be a positive outcome in the near future with this individual? That's what I don't understand. And to suspend a sentence at DOC and go on 2 years active probation. I mean, look, I understand the necessity for probation, but probation officers don't have a magic fairy dust that they spray over these defendants that are going to, you know, resolve their substance abuse, addiction, addictive disorder, or mental health issue. And there's no special fairy dust that works to say, don't ever carry a gun again. You know what he's going to go. He's playing it in the drug trade. He's carrying a gun. I mean, let's call it for what it is, right? I mean.
So just as we have a shortage of police officers and prosecutors, we have a shortage of probation agents. They're supervising way too many cases. And usually the supervision requires the offender to come into the office of the probation and parole agent, you know, every quarter, or maybe call in on the phone multiple times. So there isn't direct line supervision. We don't have enough probation officers to be able to do all of that. So the system knows that. The DA knows that. The judge knows that. And that's why I think that his second sentence was totally inappropriate and set into motion the chain of events that resulted in this senseless and preventable tragedy.
You know, and it's sad. Obviously, the death is horrible. But what's horrible as well is that the police have put their hands on this individual 3-4 times. He didn't show up in court for one of his cases. In a relatively short period of time, and it's like the system's not awake. It's almost as though we're asleep at the wheel, you know. And we go through all this exercise, and obviously we have the evidence because he's pleading guilty to this and the whole nine yards. But you know, I don't know, unless there were some evidentiary problems, and that's
obviously there wasn't. You know, and the thing is, if it didn't matter what happened after arrest, we wouldn't need a prosecutor. We wouldn't need a judge. But the only way to incapacitate these repeat offenders is to successfully convict them of these offenses. He pled guilty. He admitted his guilt. But the sentences didn't appropriately reflect the danger that he poses to himself and to the community. And, you know, a family paid the ultimate price for that misjudgment by the district attorney and by the judge.
No doubt. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. Give us a shout on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, let's pivot to carjacking numbers, although this was a carjacking case that we were just talking about. And just as an aside, Rafi, I don't know if you saw breaking news. Derek Groves, who is the 10th and last individual that has not been returned to the prison here in New Orleans, he may be cornered in Atlanta, according to Fox News. So we'll keep people abreast of that.
No, I had not heard that.
Cold-blooded killer he is, Derek Groves.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, this is an individual that was found guilty by a unanimous jury of two counts of murder and then pled guilty to an additional two counts of murder. Are actually manslaughter, which is murder. So, you know, at least four homicides associated with Derek Groves. So he was extremely motivated to escape from custody because he's facing a mandatory life sentence on those four murder charges. So, and he's proven to be the most elusive of the 10 escapees, and I'm hopeful that they have, in fact, located him. If they've located him there, I don't have any information, but I suspect that the U.S. Marshals Service is responsible for locating him because they are amazing. Anytime there is a difficult fugitive to apprehend, that case goes to the marshals, and they do not stop. They are relentless. So I suspect that, you know, what we may find out, if in fact he has been located, if he is apprehended, I suspect the United States Marshals Service has played a significant role in his apprehension.
No doubt. You know what I say? They can find a tick on the ass of a donkey in the middle of the Mojave Desert. So,
yep.
We like us the U.S. Marshals.
Yep.
So let's talk about the carjacking numbers.
Right. So, you know, again, we've seen an uptick in violent crime over the last 2 months. There was a double homicide this morning that initially was classified as a double homicide. Just before I came on, I was informed that that was a murder-suicide. Over the past 10 days, there have been four murder-suicides. Those are, for all intents and purposes, practically impossible for law enforcement to prevent. But the police department and the state police have done an incredible job of bringing down violent crime week after week, month after month, year after year, over the last several years. But what we have seen over the past 2 months is a noticeable uptick in homicides. So that, you know, we are essentially at the same, we've had the same numbers of murders this year as we had at the same point in time last year. That means that we're treading water. And what we've experienced since 2022 is dramatic declines across the board. So what's happened over the last couple of months is a disturbing trend, but 2 months do not make it a sustained trend. If we're talking about four of the murders being murder-suicides, you know, that puts into context, you know, that we don't have Derek Groves out on the street committing multiple murders. This is, you know, three of them were domestic situations, and one of them was the Wells case. So after, you know, the defendant, the suspect, Raymond Wells, carjacked and murdered Mr. Morgan, he drove into Jefferson Parish and committed suicide there. So, you know, again, homicides are up, and the public is noticing, in part because we keep this information updated on a weekly basis. But I think it's important to also take into consideration some of the other indicators a violent crime, more particularly carjacking. And we saw carjackings virtually explode in 2022. In 2022, there were a total of 228 carjackings for the whole year. Last year, 2024, we had 74 carjackings. So with a little over 2 months left in this year, you know, we are at 52. So we're on pace to have fewer carjackings this year than we had last year. Non-fatal shootings are down, and armed robberies are down. And, you know, homicides are about even. I'm hoping that the trend turns with respect to homicides. But, you know, there are certain things that the police can do. The most important thing when there is a crime of violence perpetrated is for law enforcement to quickly identify the individual that was the perpetrator of that crime and arrest that individual. That's the way that violent crime has come down in this city over the past 3 years. And as the police department and now their partners, the state police, are arresting and prioritizing violent felony offenders as they are arrested, their bail is set higher, which means that they stay in pretrial custody instead of being released back out on the streets, meaning that they cannot commit additional crimes of violence. And many of those violent offenders were opportunist, meaning that, yes, they would commit crimes of violence, but they would also commit other crimes to support their lifestyles, including drugs and property crimes. So by arresting and identifying and removing from the streets the violent offenders, we've seen not just violent crime reduce, but all categories of crime come down. So these trends are important. And what I want the audience to understand is every one of these crimes is scrutinized in detail by the New Orleans Police Department. Every week, there is a weekly department-wide meeting where every police district, every detective unit comes into the same room and they present all of the violent crimes that were perpetrated in the prior week, and they discuss what they have done to identify the individuals that were responsible for that, and they share that with the entire department. They do that on a case-by-case basis, and they do that every week, rain or shine. So the fact that we've seen crime go down over the last 3 years is not happenstance. You know, it's not because of a shift in the La Nina wind currents of the city. It's because of the hard work and the dedication of the police department, and now their partners, the state police, in identifying trends, identifying who's responsible for the violent crime, and arresting them. And I have no doubt that the police department will be able to reverse the trend that we're seeing right now with this strategy, because it flat out works.
Absolutely. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Rafael Goianeci, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We've been talking about a number of issues, and we move to yet another one that's troubling. More issues at the Orleans Justice Center. Rafi, tell us about it.
Well, actually, it's good news, Newell. And I know you're probably scratching your head. You know, last week it was...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong thing. You're right. I apologize.
So, you know, the thing is that last week there were a couple of stories where the sheriff's office disclosed that they thwarted what could have potentially been another mass escape from the jail. Apparently, some inmates had defeated and removed screws from a gate on the first floor that would have enabled at least one inmate and probably multiple inmates to escape. And there was also another disclosure that a sheriff's office employee was arrested for attempting to smuggle in drugs into the jail. So why is that good news? Well, the good news is that it was discovered that the inmates were attempting to remove screws from a gate that would have facilitated an escape. That's what the sheriff's office is supposed to be doing. The fact that inmates want to escape from that jail is no surprise to anybody. There are 1,460 plus inmates in that jail. Two-thirds of those inmates are in there for felony crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses. They're facing decades in the penitentiary if they're convicted, and none of them want to be there. So they, of course, will be attempts to escape. And it's the sheriff's office to responsibility to identify those escape attempts and defeat them before it happens. And then the fact that an employee was attempting to smuggle in drugs, checked. There's been over 20 arrests of employees, deputies and civilian employees, that have been arrested by the sheriff's office since 2022 attempting to smuggle in drugs or commit malfeasance. So that jail is one of the hardest jails in the state of Louisiana to manage because the inmates are in there for serious crimes of violence, and many of the employees come from the same neighborhoods as the inmates. They know one another. So the sheriff's office has to be particularly vigilant in identifying some of the guards and employees that are going to cross the line and accept money to smuggle in contraband and other illegal things like cell phones and everything. And the sheriff's office did their job last week, and I want to give them credit for identifying and averting a potential escape and identifying and arresting an employee before they could introduce drugs into the facility. So job well done, and you know, we'll monitor what's happening. That employee that got arrested for smuggling drugs into the facility is in pretrial custody with a $110,000 bond.
And I think that's Savannah Jordan, is that right?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, no, you're right. Job well done, and I apologize. I was looking on the wrong page there and was reading it entirely wrong. But good news, always when you can avert those types of situations from occurring inside the jail. As always, we appreciate your time, Rafi. Thank you so much for the accommodation as well this week.
And, sure.
Have a great weekend.
You too. See you next week.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot. Stay with us. Well, I'm in the studio for hump day, and I can see what Scoot's dressed up in. He's ready, baby, let me tell you.
You know, and I don't even want the audience to know what I wear for hump day, but I am indeed prepared for hump day. Yeah, I love that. You know, that goes way back in radio. That was one of the early naughty things we used to say. Yeah, it's hump day, man. We're on FM. It's like really cool. All right. 40% of the victims in fatal car crashes over the last 6 years had elevated levels of marijuana in their blood. Should that information be used to stop the legalization of pot? And we'll have the latest on the mayor's race. And there's the new debate over the Ten Commandments.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. Scoot's up next. Got a great lineup. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again in the morning.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.